It's time for Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast brought to you by the fan site, taylorswift13.org. Welcome to episode 20 of Taylor Talk, everybody. This is Adam.
Belle.
And Haley.
It is beautiful July the 1st, 2012, and we've got an awesome episode planned for you. But first, let's kick it off with some announcements. First announcement, taylortalk.org gets a makeover. Go check it out. We're really proud of it. So taylortalk.org. Now, the second announcement. This may disappoint all of you, but for the first time in months, since episode 11 to be specific, we have a very special guest interview for you guys. Yay! Woo-hoo! Guest interview.
What a bummer. I mean, who wants an awesome guest interview?
I know. You guys are probably so upset that someone who knows even more about Taylor than Belle does.
Hey.
I mean, we've got someone who even text messages Taylor on her birthday.
And Taylor has given this person an awesome makeover.
Taylor has given this person a makeover. You guys want to know who it is? Our very special guest is... Ah, just kidding. You guys are going to have to sit through the boring stuff to find out. So let's kick it off with the calendar. Upcoming on Sunday, July 22nd, we're going to have the Teen Choice Awards from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Taylor's nominated for 5 different awards. She's nominated for Choice Female Artist, Choice Female Country Artist, Choice Voice. I like saying that. She's nominated for Choice Voice for her voiceover for Audrey in The Lorax. She's nominated for Choice Single by a Female Artist for Eyes Open. And finally, Choice Country Song for Sparks Fly. So you can go vote for Taylor at teenchoiceawards.com. So Haley, if you could kick us off with the news, that'd be awesome.
Awesomeness. Now, this is really cool because Rolling Stones has named Taylor Swift the Speak Now album to their list of Women Who Rock, the 50 greatest albums of all time.
All time,
guys. She's listed at number 45.
Woohoo!
Yay! Go Taylor. That's awesome.
Next up, Ed Sheeran discusses Taylor Swift in an interview with Pop Crush. Now, why is this news? Because he admitted that Work Together, which we've all been wondering about, was for her project.
Yay.
Now, will we see Ed on album 4? Well, I sure hope so. What about you guys?
I hope so, too.
I am excited. I hope it makes it on the album.
We know that Taylor writes far more songs than actually make it onto her album. So, let's keep our fingers crossed on this one.
Fingers and toes.
And toes. Got it.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is kind of exciting. Taylor and B.O.B.'s new music video for Both of Us has been released. Yay! It's completely awesome, and you have to watch it if you haven't watched it already. You guys, what did you think?
Woo!
Yes!
Yes.
Yes. It's amazing. It's so different from anything she's done thus far in terms of music videos.
It is very different. It's kind of like a montage. And usually her videos are very linear, but this was just really well put together.
Not to mention that Taylor's look is completely different. I had to do a double take.
I like the part where she's playing with dogs.
That is so
cute. Oh my god, I love that part.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't seen the video yet, you should go to taylortalk.org and we'll have it up for you. And just so you know, any videos that we reference at all on Taylor Talk are going to be found on taylortalk.org. Another awesome thing is that Taylor introduces a new fragrance to her Wonderstruck journey called Wonderstruck Enchanted. It's coming out, I think, roughly a year from when her first fragrance came out, so in October. And I'm so excited to smell this perfume because I love wearing Wonderstruck. People always ask me, what are you wearing? That smells so good.
Yeah, she kind of caught us off guard with that, didn't she? Just came out of nowhere exactly. And is like, hey-o!
Especially so soon.
It's been a full year.
Yeah, but still.
I know Adam's going to wear it.
Yeah, it seems like it's almost going to be more of a outdoorsy smell to me than the fruitiness of Wonderstruck.
I love how she kind of is not just making, like, one fragrance, but she's sort of, like, I feel like she's trying to do the same thing with her fragrances that she does with her songs, which is, like, she tries to kind of, like, bring you on a journey and tell the story. And I think that's just really cool. I mean, she is extremely good at what she does, and not just musically, but in anything that she does, she puts forth the same type of message.
For sure. So, Belle and Haley, do you think it's time to reveal who our very special guest is?
I don't know.
I don't know, Adam. More. Are they ready for this?
Nah. So, why don't we just play them a little teaser clip from our guest speaking and see if they can guess it between now and when he joins us. Oh, I revealed it to he.
Oh, we have the gender. Dun, dun,
dun. This is going to be a fun interview. I can tell you that right now. I'm going to have a great time with you guys. We're going to laugh. We might cry. We'll kiss some babies, but we're going to make this thing happen.
Listeners, you still have to wait just a little bit until after our mini segment. On to You Know You're a Swiftie When, / If Swifties Rule the World. First one is from Zoe via Facebook. That's actually the first submission we've ever gotten from Facebook. You know you're Swiftie When. You already know your license plate in the future is going to be Swiftie or something Taylor related.
Aw, that's cute.
It is.
You know you're a Swiftie when you have a slight obsession with Taylor Talk. Okay, fine. A huge obsession. And that was submitted by Forever Enchanted 13 via Taylor Connect.
Yeah!
Agreed. Alright, this is submitted by @TSLongLive13. You know you're a Swiftie when you say the words like Swiftastic or That's Tamazing, and people look at you like you're crazy.
Oh, we don't think you're crazy.
You're not crazy.
Taylor puns!
That was awesome.
That was cool. Anyway, the next one is from @AmandaHartTS, who says, you know you're a Swiftie when you ask your mom to literally buy you every single magazine that has Taylor's photo inside.
That is a lot of magazines.
Yeah, that's a lot
of
magazines.
Commitment, girl. Commitment.
I don't even think that just includes Taylor on the cover. I think that's anyone that has a photo of her anywhere.
Again, that's a lot of magazines.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. You must have quite the collection.
You know you're a Swiftie when Taylor Swift lyrics dominate your school books. # you know you're a Swiftie when. And that is from BaileyC0011.
And the last one is submitted by @17_Serena, who says, you know you're a Swiftie when you're excited to graduate high school in 2013.
That's an awesome year to graduate.
Go class of 2013.
Heck yeah.
All right, guys, the moment you've been waiting for that we've been teasing you this entire episode, our guest interview, drum roll please. Joining us on episode 20 is Rick Barker. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you, guys. Glad
Hi.
To be here.
Hello.
So just real quick for our listeners who might not know who you are and what your connection to Taylor is, would you mind explaining that for us?
Sure. I actually had the privilege and was blessed to be one of the first regionals at Big Machine Records when Scott Borchetta and Toby Keith, for those that don't remember, is they had started two labels under one roof, Showdog Nashville and Big Machine Records. And then after a couple months, Toby had a whole bunch of people he was signing. Scott had some artists that he was signing, and they decided to part ways. And Scott called and hired me to be his West Coast regional out of Big Machine Records. And when I flew out to Nashville to interview and meet with him on my way back to the airport, I had been doing radio for 15 years, so Scott and I had a relationship. He handed me a CD of this 15-year-old that he had signed and said, hey, listen to this music on your way to the airport, and then when you get back to California, you know, tell me what you think. And I started listening to it on the airport. After the first song, I called him back on the phone and I said, I'm in. I said, she's brilliant. I said, there's something about her. And that was just by listening to the music. I hadn't even met her yet. So I was blessed after being at Big Machine Records to end up being asked by Taylor and her family to manage her career. And was fortunate. As I like to say, I was involved from 0 to 4 million. And then this thing took off. And, you know, her and I, she was going in one direction. I wanted to go. I didn't want to go as fast as that direction was going. I was gone 185 days my first year with her, and I had two kids. So we decided to part ways, and I decided to take every bit of experience and knowledge and everything that I'd learned from her and open up my own consulting business and be a little bit closer to home and remain, you know, one of her biggest fans. And, you know, I'm just so proud of everything that she's done and accomplished, and she stayed true to who she is. So I'm very, very excited for where she's at.
Do you still serve as an advisor to her in any capacity?
No, not at all. Taylor has an amazing team. You know, I did what I could. You know, what you got to remember is that I was this guy from radio. I had zero experience ever managing an artist. You know, Taylor and I ended up together because what happens is when an artist first goes out, they go out on a radio tour to introduce themselves to radio. Before they ever try to get a radio station to add their music, they go out and build relationships. Well, because Taylor had never gone out to radio and my background was radio, we brought her out to California and her and I spent 30 days together, which actually turned out to be 30 days that changed both of our lives because she wanted to learn, I wanted to teach. I was able to identify the strengths that she had right away, pass those along to the rest of the regionals, and we took those strengths and ran with them. And, you know, she ended up having an amazing launch to her career. She, you know, she broke all kinds of records, changed people's opinions of the internet, changed people's opinions of young teenagers with music. I mean, she changed the world, literally. And I don't mean that in a cliche, corny kind of way, but literally that's what she did and continues to do.
I think there's a lot of interesting revolutionary things that she's done with her career that have really made a difference in like a lot of other people trying to break into the business.
It is. The problem is that there's only ever going to be one Taylor Swift, and too many of these people come in wanting to be the next Taylor Swift. And as I advise young artists and work with people, I tell them, you know, you need to be the first you. You know, I consult Big Machine Records to this day, and I still help get a lot of their baby acts ready to go out on radio tour. And that's one of the first things that I try to tell them is, especially young females, you're going to get compared anyway just by fault. It's like every young, good-looking kid is want to be the next Justin Bieber. It's just by fault that that happens. That may not necessarily be the goal or the plan of this kid, but that's going to happen. So she basically, when her and I got together, there was only MySpace. You got to remember, she didn't have Facebook yet. There wasn't Twitter. YouTube wasn't being utilized the way that it's doing. She went out and created this army of people with a MySpace following. And if anybody takes anything from this whole entire interview, know this, Taylor Swift worked her tail off to get where she is today. Her daddy didn't buy it. Her mama didn't buy it. The record company didn't give it to her. She developed a work person's mentality and she went out and earned everything that she has today. And that's the part that bothers me sometimes is when I hear those other people saying, well, you know, she was lucky, she was this, she was that. No, she worked.
So speaking of MySpace and reaching out to her fans individually, was that before or after your quote that we've all heard before about if you want to sell 500,000 albums, you have to meet 500,000 people?
When I met Taylor and started working with her in that capacity of the record label, she had already started the MySpace situation. What ended up happening is while we were out on this radio tour and we were going in and she really wanted to learn, I wanted to teach, like I said, we were out, I identified right away that when she walked into a room, she got their attention and she could handle a room. She looked people in the eyes. She had a great firm handshake. She was just, when she played, you know, she played, if there were three people in the room, you would have thought there were 3,000 because she gave everything no matter who was in the room. She does something that I try to teach other artists today is young people and artists tend to play and worry about who's not there, not who's there. And what I mean by that is if they walk in and see three people in a room, they get bummed that there's only three people. Taylor walked in and saw three new friends. You know, that's how she saw it. So we were sitting there. I think we were in Fresno. We had just opened up for Jack Ingram. We were supposed to open up for Jack Ingram. And Jack decided that he wanted to open up for Taylor. And the promoter goes, yeah, Jack, but you've had more experience. He goes, look, let me explain something to you. He said, when I get done, when Taylor finishes, those kids are going to go out in the hall and wait for her to meet her. He said, so I can either play for an empty crowd or I can go first to play for a packed crowd. He goes, I choose to go first. And that got me thinking. So Taylor comes up and she says, I want a gold record. You know, we always would sit down and talk about goals. And if you want a gold record, it means you need to sell 500,000 CDs. So my response to her without even thinking about it, because I'm a math guy, is I'm like, well, if you want a gold record, we need to go meet 500,000 people. That way you can sell 500,000 records. Because I knew that every person she got in front of would want to purchase what she had. So that was our mantra. That was our goal. That's what Polestar asked her. Why did you choose Rick? He had no experience. And she said, So I told him I wanted to sell 500,000 records, and he said, let's go meet 500,000 people. And that's what we did. Real quick.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, she did a great job at
13 weeks, yeah. 13 weeks. You know, she did magical things. She created what we created, and what she did was awesome is that, you know, she treated it like a business. So it's like, even as she was getting better, she was still communicating with her MySpace friends. She was still, you know, doing the signing lines and the meet and greet lines and everything. The thing that lapped is I had an artist, and I won't say who this artist is, one time come up to Taylor and I, and she was all bummed that she had to do something. And Taylor just had this look on her face. She's like, oh my gosh. She goes, I would die if this was taken away from me. You know, she said, I absolutely love every bit of this. And I had a manager come up to me and he says, listen, he goes, why is it that she does these 3-hour lines? I said, honestly, it's the only time she gets to hang out with people her own age. I said, all day long, she's stuck around adults. You know, this is her chance to be a kid. This is her chance to associate with her peers. This is her chance to show them that she appreciates everything that they do to them. A lot of people go out and do after show signings because they feel they have to. Taylor did it because she wanted to. She felt obligated to say thank you. And that's what made her different and still makes her different. I mean, obviously she can't do them today or she'd be signing for 30 hours and the Jets couldn't get her to her next location. But she still does what she can with the tea parties and things like that. She's always created a brilliant way to stay interacted with her fans. Unfortunately, the numbers are too huge, so physically she can't do it. And it bothers me when I see people, you know, Taylor's changed. Well, of course she's changed. She sold 45 million records. You know, it's like she hasn't changed her beliefs. She still hasn't shown up on Celebrity Rehab. She's not in the papers being, you know, you can fill in the words. You know, Taylor is who Taylor is. Taylor's life has changed. So unfortunately, the access had to change. And that's just part of the business.
You know, I actually, the first time I met Taylor, it was one of those smaller shows that she did. It was the beginning of 2008. And she did like a signing line afterwards. And she just stood outside and hung out with everybody, with her parents and her fans, you know, and her band and everybody. They all just kind of stood around and hung out with everybody and talked to us for like a half hour. And I was just really impressed by that, actually, because she's a very, very down-to-earth person.
You know, she is, and she always has been. The great thing about Taylor is that her mom and dad are great, hardworking people, you know, and she developed, I think, that trait from them. So it's not like she's surrounded by a bunch of lazy people. They're very brilliant. They're very smart. They work well together as a team. That's why I'm excited to see that they're still involved with her career, is because they're very valuable assets, you know, and I adore them. But I always love the fact that if Taylor could do it, she would do it. If she couldn't do it, it bummed her out. I remember the night that we had to stop doing meet and greets because the promoter told us that it would just take too long and they didn't, you know, couldn't have security and all this stuff. She cried.
Oh.
It broke her heart. It broke her heart. I mean,
that's so sad.
That was her life, was staying.
That is sad.
Yeah, that was her life. Her life was staying after and signing for everyone. But what you have to remember sometimes is when there's more people that won't get to meet you than there are that will get to meet you, that's almost where you have to draw the line. Because what happens is, it's not, and I'll just use small numbers just for general examples, it's not the 100 people that meet you that go on Facebook and say how great you are. It's the 100 people that didn't get to meet you that sat in line that start bad-mouthing. Well, you know, and that's dangerous for an artist's career. It's really dangerous. So, you know, there comes a time where you have to draw the line, and that's a day that really bums out a lot of artists. It really does.
Yeah, she really does go above and beyond to try and do what she can, for sure. CMFS meet and greets, she would go beyond her allotted time and try to meet as many people as she
would. She would. That's why she decided to rent out the Bridgestone Arena and do it as long as she wanted to, so nobody could complain.
That's exactly right. That was an awesome, awesome 13-hour thing she did. I can't believe the fact that she would take the time to do that and how incredibly exhausting that must have been.
You know what's funny with her? I never felt that it was exhausting. I felt that it's like, you know, an injured athlete, you know, under the lights and everything happens, they develop this sense of adrenaline that just takes over. And that's Taylor, you know, it's like she would look, I remember people would come walking down a line and as soon as a girl would come up to her, the first thing she would say is, oh my gosh, I love your necklace. You know, then all of a sudden they're having this conversation. It's like that girl was originally very nervous shaking, you know, and now all of a sudden Taylor just paid her a compliment and it just relaxed the girl, it relaxed Taylor, and they went on to the next thing. I don't ever think she sat there. I mean, she would always get, you know, hey, give me a water or do this, or you'd look and 3 hours would go by and there's no sip of water even taken out of it when she asked you for water 3 hours ago. So obviously she was thirsty, but she gets so into what she's doing. It's just awesome to watch. And I'm just grateful that I was blessed to be a part of something special. And, you know, like I said, it changed my life. And, you know, I'll forever be a fan. I buy every record. You know, I buy every DVD series. I bought it when I worked for her. You know, it's just that's how I am. I'm a fan of the music.
So what did you actually learn when you worked for her that you've been able to apply to current artists you're working with?
That basically, if you put the fans first, anything can happen for you. You know, Scott Borchetta says something that's very cool. He says, every artist has an audience. You just have to determine how big that audience is. And that's one of the things that I learned with Taylor. I learned that there was this group of young people out there that wanted as much as you were willing to give them. And right now I've got artists giving away music, which is unheard of. And the reason for that is because of the fact that young, and I want to say this, and I want to say it out of respect to young people, but you guys want to buy, you just don't want to be sold to. You guys don't want to feel like you're being marketed to. You want to feel that you found something special and you want to share it with your friends. So if I can duplicate that, and if I can say, hey, here's a whole bunch of free music, please go tell your friends about it, I'm going to have a much better chance of you digging my new artist and following them on Facebook and following them on Twitter is if it was you. And that's what people were finding Taylor on MySpace. You know, when she went out to radio, she had 70,000 friends she was bringing along. And these were friends that she had communicated with and spent time with. So that's one of the things that I teach right now is that you have to stay engaged with your audience. It can't always be about you. Right now, there's so many musicians, you know, you sign up for their newsletter and the only time you hear about them, vote for me, buy for me, I need you, I need you, I need you. It's never, hey, I was thinking about you and here's this cool new song. You know, so with my artists, that's what's happening right now. And that shift is going to take place here in Nashville because of that. I also learned that your rewards are not always in direct proportion to the work that you put in. We're trying to function in a dysfunctional business. I also learned from Taylor that one is an audience. I remember we were in Fresno one time and we had to stop at a store. We had done a show earlier that day with Jack Ingram, Jason Michael Carroll, and I think Ty Herndon. Taylor was the earlier person on the show, and we all loved ice cream. We loved ice cream. We loved yogurt. So we stopped at this yogurt shop in Fresno, and this little girl, there were only six people in the store, this little girl, all of a sudden, she starts shaking at the cash register. And she goes, you're Taylor Swift. I'm your friend on MySpace. And that's the first time that I had heard somebody just say that to her randomly. Like, we were in this random town where she was getting no radio airplay. The only way that girl knew about her was because of MySpace. And she's like, yes, I am. She goes, could I take a picture with you? Would you mind? So Taylor went, she took a picture, and she looked at me, and she's like, would you go get my guitar? So I walk out to the car to go get her guitar. At the time, Emily was with us. She went out, grabbed her fiddle, and a guy by the name of Todd was playing guitar for her. So the next thing you know, Taylor's doing this show in this yogurt shop for six people. And they all start calling their friends and texting their friends. And the next thing you know, there's 40 people at the yogurt shop. No sound system, no nothing. Next year, we're there opening up for Tim and Faith. And in the front row, there's two girls wearing these shirts that say, hey, Taylor, we're the girls from the yogurt shop.
Aww.
That's awesome. That actually sounds like a guerrilla marketing tactic, and it was inadvertent.
It was. It was just basically she gave them something so unique and so special. You know, people used to hand us phone numbers in the meet and greet line, and, you know, I started keeping them. And when we were driving along in the bus, I'd just say, hey, here, take my phone. Call this person. And at first, they were curious. They're like, why would you want to call this person? I said, because you know how many people they're going to go tell that Taylor Swift called them? That's great advertising for us. We're on a bus. We're not doing anything. We're watching Grey's Anatomy reruns. You know, let's call people. Let's do these things. So that's the little things that she just started doing on her own. I mean, one of the funniest things I'll ever remember and how I learned that not everything has to be perfect. that you send out there. We had the Love, Love, Love bracelets originally. And those who have them know how hard they were to tie. And we were in Canada, and she was getting ready to do this television show. So she was all dolled up. I said, hey, let's shoot like a tutorial on how to tie that Love, Love, Love bracelet. So she starts doing this thing, and she's using her teeth, and she's doing everything, and it's hysterically funny. And the next thing you know, we throw it out there. That's when we first started using YouTube, and it had like 100,000 views. People were spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to get hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube. And we took my phone at the time, which wasn't the greatest phone. This was like 2006, I think, and shot a little video and put it up on YouTube. But then all of a sudden, everything we knew, as often as we could get her on TV, we needed to get her on TV. And TV to us also meant YouTube. You know, everyone else felt if they're not on Jay Leno or David Letterman, they're not having success. Taylor just wanted to be wherever she could. And that's what she did.
Is that still around, that video, the YouTube video?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go look. You can look it up. Yeah, you can go look it up. It's like you just, YouTube Taylor ties Love, Love, Love bracelet or something like that. And somebody will probably find it. What I'm going to look for today, I started thinking about something because I was reading through your questions. I'm trying to find the video of the manager makeover that was absolutely hysterical. You know, it's when I was with Taylor and we were doing all the meet and greet lines and all this stuff, I always felt that I needed to look young and hip. You know, right now I'm 45 years old. So, you know, I was wearing the shirts like the band guys and I was buying jeans like the band guys. And you got to remember, I was 289 pounds. I was this big fat thing that was sitting there trying to dress like these band members. So finally, Taylor come up to me and she goes, Rick, I love you, but we got to do something about your look. She said, I want to take you shopping. She said, you and my mom, we're going to be in Denver. Let's go shopping. So the radio station decided that they were going to do this bit called the manager makeover. So we walk into this mall. We talk a little bit on camera. We walk into the mall. And as we walk in, I think we're like in Macy's or something. And she says, band shops to the left of the store. Rick shops to the right of the store. And we started going through and she's pulling out shirts and jackets and all this stuff. And she says to me, she says, you know what? She said, you need glasses. I go, glasses? She goes, yeah, people will take you more serious if you have glasses. Now, I have great vision. So the next thing you know, we're in a glasses store and we're getting these frames and, you know, they're the blanks, you know, the whole thing. And I've got these new boots and jeans and shirts and all this cool stuff that she picked out for me. And she walks up to me and at the time, I think we'd gone platinum or something like that. And this was her treat for me. She was buying me all these clothes and she comes up and she grabs these sunglasses and she says, nothing says platinum like Versace. So I've got these Versace glasses that are blanks, all these new clothes. I'm decked out. I walk out. The next thing you know, girls are checking me out, all this stuff. And Taylor's taking full credit for this. She goes, see, I told you, your wife's going to love you so much more now. And, you know, all this different kind of stuff. And I was just cracking up laughing. But if anybody could track down the manager makeover, I would love to see it again. It was a funny, funny day. It's probably from December. I don't think it was December.
2007?
No, snow. It was in 2000.
The Grizzly Rose down in Denver?
In 2007. Yes.
I was there.
Yes. Okay. That was me, the good-looking guy with the glasses.
Yeah, it was back in
October. And the coat and the whole thing. Yeah, we shot that day. Okay, so it's out there. KYGO, I think, put it up on their deal. So, yeah, it was at that show. That was also the day that she met Jay Cutler for the first time. Jay Cutler and his girlfriend were in the audience. And I ran the meet and greet line that night, so we might have met.
So, Rick, you were around in Taylor's early career. Do you remember when there was a Taylor Talk section on her official website?
You know what? I don't. The official website I remember was the butterfly book. Remember the book where you opened up the book and it had all the tabs and you went down and did the tabs?
Right. I remember exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know then if it was on. Was
no,
it, on
it
that
wasn't.
One?
It was probably even before that.
It was
like
in
2003.
Oh, in 2003?
It had nothing to do with us, obviously, but I was really amused by it when I discovered it.
No, that's funny. No, because she really, at that point, hadn't, you know, she was just writing. I think they were still in Pennsylvania at that time, or maybe had just moved to Nashville when she got her development deal at Sony. So that might have been around 2003. But if you go to her MySpace, to her very last page of friends, it's this guy from her high school that goes, "Ha, here I am, your first friend." I always love going to the last page of people. It's like whenever I Google search somebody, I go to like page 50 because that's where you really get the good stuff. You know, the stuff on the front is all the cool, happy stuff. So if you're ever researching people, go to Google and go backwards and go into the deep. So what I did with MySpace one time is I wanted to find out. At the beginning, I was tracking all those numbers because that's what we were telling radio. Look, I know you don't want to play a teenage girl, but look, she has this many fans, this many followers, this many people. And what we did was that, you know, she replied to a lot of comments because it was starting where you could buy programs that could manipulate the MySpace friends. So people were like, "Yeah, you really don't have those friends." I'm like, "Yeah, but you can't manipulate comments. Look at this. You know, here's these conversations that she was having with people that were awesome." And that's what I try to share with people today. And one of the things that I teach on my website with the advice that I give to artists is you have to engage your fans. You know, there has to be people. I call it the four pillars of the music business, and this is a whole different conversation that we can have one day. But it's basically brand is the first pillar, build is the second pillar, cultivate is the third, and sell is the fourth. And what normally happens is people just come out and sell, and they're selling. You know, how many times have you looked on a Facebook side thing and the first thing you see is a picture of an artist that says, "Hey, buy my CD," and you're like, "Dude, I don't even know you. You know, why would I just go spend my hard-earned money? Why don't you click something that says, 'Hey, here's 7 free songs to get to know my music.'" You know, so that's what I teach people, is that you have to build the brand first. Then you need to build the following. Then you need to cultivate the following. Then you need to sell, whether it is your shows, your products, or whatever. And a lot of people don't do that. That's what Taylor did. Taylor knew who she was, what she was doing. Her and her mom designed her signature look. I know that was one of your questions, you know, why is she not wearing cowboy boots and dresses anymore? The same reason why you're not wearing your animals, you know, you grow out of things, you know, there's just a phase that you go through. What Taylor had to do was Taylor knew that she had to be different. She couldn't come walking in skinny jeans and midriff shirts like every other artist that was walking in there. So she loved dresses and she loved boots. So that's what she did. And she also loves heels and she also loves other things. So guess what? She's a 22-year-old woman now. So that's what she does. You know, you evolve. What I hate is when that artist is still trying to look like they looked 6 years ago. Then you're like, wait a minute. You know, I don't wear the same things I wore 6 years ago. Why should an artist? My style's changed. I grow. You grow. We all grow. You know, we all go through different phases. I mean, thank goodness, or I'd still have a mullet. You know, thank goodness.
Hey, you know what? I had a mullet back in the 90s also. We all did.
I didn't, Adam.
Absolutely. You
You're
know?
A female, Belle.
Thanks for that.
Guys had there mullets. Mullets were styling.
Dude, girls had mullets too. Trust me. There was this website called Mullets Galore for a while, and there was chicks with mullets. There was everybody with mullets. So, I mean, don't break my heart. My hate can break your heart.
You know what's interesting about what you were saying about Taylor and the way that she engages her fans is that I remember the MySpace days too, when she was on MySpace. And the thing that I remember most about it was that she was having this comment conversation with somebody about somebody had seen a black squirrel and they didn't have a picture of it. And so Taylor kept commenting like repeatedly, like, "Did you find a picture of the black squirrel yet? Did you see the black squirrel again?" And like she kept like repeatedly like trying commenting this person, like begging them for a picture of this supposed legendary black squirrel.
Well, because it interests her, you know? I mean, that's the thing, is that everything about her is so real and so funny. I mean, she is an absolute crack up, you know, and that's the thing that I think's great, and that's the thing that I feel is engaging, you know. It's as a fan, you know, you want to know that artist appreciates what you do. You know, even if they can't come out to you individually and say, "I really respect and appreciate everything you do," you still want their persona to come across that way. You don't. What I despise more than anything is artists that feel entitled, that feel that just because they have a song on the radio or because they've had some success that they're entitled to things. You're not entitled to anything. You know, Taylor looks at this business as a blessing every day she's in this business. You know, I look at it, I have the ability right now to be put in a position to have a great life for myself because I was able to take the things that we had done and turn them into a business and a very good business. Now, what I'm finding is there's so many young people and so many parents and so many artists that just want what's best for their kids, and there's nobody there to give them answers. So that's why I started musicindustryblueprint.com. was a place where I could give free music advice to families because I didn't want them coming to town and having some guy who hadn't worked in 5 years going, you spend this kind of money and I can help make you the next Taylor Swift. Well, wait a minute. If Taylor Swift's former guy is telling you to slow down and not spend that money, who would you rather listen to? So I made it a point that I was going to give away free music advice. I have a 7-day video series on my website. It's called The 7 Keys for Increasing Your Odds. Because right now, it's not about being pretty and being able to sing. Turn on American Idol. Turn on The Voice. There's hundreds of thousands of beautiful people who can sing. It's, are you engaging? Is an audience buying what you're selling? There's a reason why every contestant that comes off of these shows isn't successful. Because the audience did not engage. And you need to be, as a person, as an artist, as anything, remarkable. Seth Godin, who has a fabulous book called Tribes, talks about being remarkable. And what that means is doing something that other people will remark about. That makes you remarkable. Taylor Swift is remarkable because everything she does, her tribe of people, she's the leader of a very, very influential tribe of people. She can manipulate situations because she has the ability to talk to millions and millions of people, and they believe what she's saying, and she listens because her reputation is that she's always been honest with them, and she's worked hard to maintain that reputation, and I'm proud of her for that. Very proud of her.
You know, it's interesting to me, you're talking about now she's got all these millions to talk to and things like that, because I found, actually, about 5 minutes before we started talking to you, I started reading an old interview with her from 2007 that you might remember, because I think you were working with her in 2007, right?
Sure. Which
it's in floridaentertainmentscene.com. You know what I'm talking about?
I would have to look it up. I mean, we did a lot of them. I mean, I was with her first 17 magazine cover and interview. And a lot of times what happens is what you might read is called tour press. So if we were playing down in Florida, they would have done an interview with her helping promote the show. So I didn't read every single one of those newspaper articles or things like that. But most of them all asked.
Well, this is what's interesting, what I thought about it, though, because it was in 2007 and asked, where do you see yourself in 5 years from now, which is now 2012. And so her response was, in 5 years, I'll be 22. I'd really like to be starting to headline, which we know she's already had two headlining tours. I think that would be amazing. I'd love to have another platinum album. She's already got two more. And this is the one that I laugh about. She says, and I'd love to have won some sort of award, an ACM or CMA. I don't care. 5 years is a long time, so who knows what might happen. I never thought all this would happen in 1 year, so I can't wait to see my life in five. Oh, I thought that was awesome. Hilarious, because, I mean, how many awards does she have? Well over 100.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and how many lives have she touched, and how many, you know, 45 million records. So that's 45 times platinum, if you want to think about it, you know, and it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Did you know that on June 27th of this year, 2012, what's significant about that day? And it has nothing to do with Taylor. I just think it's funny because you brought something up from 5 years ago.
June 27th?
June 27th, 2012. For you movie buffs.
That just passed.
Wait, is that the supposed end of the world
it
or
did.
Something?
No, that was the day that Marty McFly and Back to the Future went to.
Oh, you remember? Yeah. There was like a Twitter trending topic for that.
6/27/2012.
Oh my
was
goodness.
Was fair Back to the Future where he went to in the future. So if he came to Nashville, it was 109 degrees that day.
Yeah, we don't have those flying cars yet. Where are they?
I'm upset about the hoverboard.
Not yet. Yeah, we're still waiting.
I know. I want my hoverboard.
That's funny. That is very funny. Hey, at least we found a movie that you've seen.
I've seen the whole trilogy. I have it on Blu-ray, the special edition package. I love that trilogy.
Okay, good. Well, congratulations there.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, something that was pointed out to me by this guy, Steve, who's a Taylor Swift fan, he pointed out to me when he was here in Vegas that the Plaza Hotel is Biff's from Back to the Future 2.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you
we
go.
We have Biff's right here in Vegas.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
I thought it was cool.
I just remember being a kid, my dad's nickname was Biff, and so we made fun of him all the time.
That is funny.
All right, now we know you want to hear more from Rick Barker, but this interview was just too long to pack into one episode. So to hear the rest of our exclusive interview with Rick, be sure to go download episode 20, part 2 right now.
We are in no way directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.